The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Jace Tingler, what are you doing, buddy? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, August 26th. The whole gang is here. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Today on the podcast, Josiah Gray versus Edward Cabrera. Pretty fun matchup there. We have our first pitcher to 200 strikeouts. Hitter moves you might want to make. I have some random trivia for the guys. Team name Thursday. But first, let's start with it. Is Blake Snell back? Pitching into the eighth inning for reasons I cannot understand. That's why we started with Jace Tingler. He was great through seven, and then they leave him out there for the eighth. The final line for Blake Snell, 7 2/3, 3 hits, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, 21 swinging strikes on 122 pitches. He was up over 100 pitches through seven, and then they brought him back out for the eighth. He gives up a game-tying solo home run to Will Smith. But overall, Blake Snell has been much better. His last five starts, he's got a 2.16 ERA, 44 strikeouts to just 10 walks over 29 2/3 innings pitched. Scott, is Blake Snell back?
He's been great. He's been great. You gave the numbers from his last five starts already?
I gave the ERA and the strikeout to walk ratio. If you have WHIP, you could certainly tell us that.
Oh, well, the WHIP is 0.98.
That's pretty good.
And the swinging strike rate is 15.3. Yeah, I mean, he's wow. This has been a really impressive stretch for him. You know, three of the five starts went less than six innings, which is always a problem for him and a problem in fantasy, of course. There does appear to be a change. This five-start stretch, it's been the month of August, basically. And one thing I've noticed is he really seems to have simplified his pitch selection, mostly going fastball slider now. He threw just 8 curveballs in this 122 pitch start against the Dodgers and no changeups at all.
And that's been a trend. The changeup has basically disappeared. He's thrown 4 of them in the month of August.
And yeah, that was Matt Harvey, Harvey Dent, Bruce Wayne, Chris Towers here on the podcast.
It makes sense.
At least I'm not wearing hockey pants.
I'm looking at the numbers against these pitches for Snell this year. On the changeup, he's given up a 429 batting average and a 595 slugging percentage. That's according to BrooksBaseball.net. So you can understand why he might not want to throw that pitch anymore, Blake Snell. And clearly the slider is his best pitch. So he's kind of gone with the trick, just lean into your strengths, throw your best pitches more, your worst pitches less, and it's really working for him because the stuff is good. The stuff is good, and maybe he was just trying to do too much with too many different pitches. You know, I'm hopeful here. I'm hopeful he's figured something out.
Cautiously optimistic on Blake Snell. Obviously, for most of the season, the command was completely out of whack. Could have been, you know, trying to do too much, as you mentioned there, Scott. Chris, would you look to start him next week back in your lineup versus the Houston Astros at the Arizona Diamondbacks?
Yeah, especially in a points league where a blow up won't necessarily kill your ratios. It's so hard to make sense of this kind of change for Blake Snell because, okay, the last five starts, he's looked like the very good version of Blake Snell we saw in 2018 and you know, for stretches in 2019 and 2020. He never pitched like this before. It's not like he's like going back to basics. You know, he's never been a fastball slider guy. His changeup has been his second pitch for most of his career. And over the last handful of seasons, it had been more the curveball. The slider's actually really been third or fourth for most of his career. So it's not like we can look back and say, ah, yes, this is what he did in 2018 when he won a Cy Young Award. That's why this is working. It's very much a different approach. How sustainable that is, you know, we've seen guys like Patrick Corbin, you know, turn their careers around by basically going fastball slider. We'll see. The slider has been his best pitch this season in terms of whiff rate, in terms of bad ball results. So, you know, at least for now, it does seem like a pretty good change.
Yeah, I was going to say, just go with what's working, right? And if the slider is working for Blake Snell, then I have no issue with it as long as the results are there for him. So obviously next week, Houston Astros, you don't love that matchup, but it is at home where Blake Snell has pitched very, very well this season. The other start is at the Arizona Diamondbacks, where he recently went 7 innings and had 13 strikeouts. So I think, yes, we are getting Blake Snell in across the board in our lineups for next week. Let's talk about some other standouts from Wednesday.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, we are not starting with Chris because the other day he said always start with him. So that means Scott, you're up first.
The only problem with that is that, like, now I'm nervous that Scott's going to take my guy.
I hope he does. I hope he does.
Well, we usually talk about it beforehand, and I thought I said I was going to do Blake Snell as my oh my goodness gracious.
Right, and now I can't. So are you going to take my guy?
I can't. No, because I know who you're doing. I was going
to take free space on the board.
I know who you're doing. I'm going to take Brendan Rodgers. I'm going to take Brendan Rodgers, who had a huge day in a doubleheader. Went 4 for 6, hit a home run. Another road home run, by the way. He keeps hitting them on the road, not at home. Hasn't taken advantage of the BABIP inflating environment of Coors Field yet. Let's see now. So that was his 8th home run on the road versus 2 at home. Yeah, hasn't taken advantage of the BABIP inflating environment of Coors Field yet. His BABIP is very normal, like a player who doesn't play half his games at Coors Field. And yet he's batting, let me see the latest now. He's batting 289 despite that. Strikeout rate is good. The power production has been there. And I think I keep hyping him, and his roster rate remains around 50%. I know he's been in and out of the lineup. Some have gotten banged up at times. But he's really on the verge of figuring it. I might argue he's figured it out already, and we just haven't seen him put together the kind of hot streak that forces everybody to take notice. He's just kind of been steady.
Well,
steadily solid.
I think part of the problem is he did have that hot streak in June. You know, he had a 927 OPS in the month of June. And he's just been right around.
It wasn't really like,
it wasn't a huge month. It was 4 home runs, 15 RBI, eight runs scored.
Yeah, it's not like he had this 35-point week where everybody's holy crap, Brendan Rodgers.
I think the problem is he's just kind of hovered around an 800 OPS for such a long time. Like, it feels like he's been good for a while, like you've said. But every time I look, it's like, oh, he's still, like, every time he has a big game, I'm like, oh, he's still right around, like, 800. I think he's up to 818 after today. And part of the issue is he's not hitting righties well. He's crushing lefties. But despite having a 336 BABIP against righties, he only has a 715 OPS with a 267 average. So
he's 52% rostered, as you mentioned. And I was going to bring this up a little bit later on, but let's just talk about it. I have a bunch of players who have been awful, hitters specifically, in the month of August. And there are 3 second basemen on this list. Jeff McNeil has a 514 OPS. Cesar Hernandez has a 549 OPS. Adam Frazier has a 579 OPS, all 3 of them below 600 for the month. Scott, would you be okay dropping McNeil, Cesar Hernandez, Adam Frazier for Brendan Rodgers?
Oh, yeah. We're talking completely different class that Rodgers is in. And Frazier, expectedly, has really, really normalized since coming over from the Pirates. May have even started a little before that, actually. He looks pretty average now.
All right, Chris, you're up. Oh, my goodness.
Let's go with Robert Glenn Ray. who I'm going to go ahead and say is in the driver's seat for the American League Cy Young right now, which, boy, if you had told people that coming into the season, they would not have believed you. But he's just continuously been amazing. 14 strikeouts in 7 innings today. His pants keep getting tighter and he keeps pitching better. I looked like they were basically painted on today. Walker Buehler's got to step his game up. Maybe wash him in cold water. Is that how you get things to shrink? 17 whiffs on his slider. Robbie Ray, the amazing thing about the transformation that he's made this season is he actually really has, like Blake Snell, so totally simplified his approach to pitching. Tonight he threw 99% of 109 of his 111 pitches were sliders or fastballs. He got 24 swinging strikes with those two pitches, including 17 with the slider. And he's mostly just, I've brought it up a bunch of times, but he's mostly just started aiming for the middle of the zone with the fastball, and it's helped him actually pound the zone. He's got a 6.2% walk rate, which is really, really, that's not just like good for Robbie Ray. That would be good for basically anyone. Yeah, he's been amazing. Obviously, it's been going on long enough that I don't think there's any reason to doubt it. And if you put money on Robbie Ray to win the AL Cy Young this year, you might have a pretty big ticket coming up.
Well, first of all, why would you have ever done that like earlier in the season? But now, it looks like it would be a pretty damn good bet. And I actually looked this up. He's 7-1 to win 7-1 to win the AL Cy Young, which are the third best odds behind Gerrit Cole and Lance Lynn. So you actually still could get a pretty good price on him. And this was actually awesome. I received this on Twitter from a Twitter handle at Lolar System. They completed the Ray Romano on Wednesday night, which is a Robbie Ray win into a Jordan Romano save. Romano picked up his 13th save of the season, so I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Just like Robbie Ray has been all season long, he's got a 2.72 ERA and a 1.02 whip. Our very own Adam Azer, he was just off by 1 year. 1 year early. Last year, one of his bold predictions when Robbie Ray was still on the Diamondbacks was that Ray would finish top three in the Cy Young in the National League. And all he needed to do was go to the Blue Jays. Who would have thought, right? The American League gets him back on track. But fantastic season for Robbie Ray. Oh, my goodness gracious for me. And I actually did say the words, oh, my goodness, when I saw this home run. Miguel Sano hit the longest home run of the season, 495 feet. It was his 22nd home run of the year. And over his last 15 games, he's batting .255, 5 homers. In the month of August overall, he has a 27% strikeout rate. So that's like pretty manageable for Miguel Sano, actually. He's 54% rostered, 6 road games next week. I asked you guys about Miguel Sano maybe a week or two ago, and you guys were lukewarm. I get it. He strikes out a lot. He's very streaky, but it looks like he's kind of going on one of these streaks or getting ready to go on one of these streaks. Are you more interested in Miguel Sano now than you were then?
I wouldn't say more interested. No. I don't know. He's going to hit home runs sometimes. I don't know what to tell you. If you need them, pick them up. If you don't.
It's always hard to do the like streaky versus just a random outcome versus, whatever you want to define it as. Like, if you give Miguel Sano 35 home runs and you say Miguel Sano is going to hit a home run every, 12 at bats or whatever that would be. That's probably way too few. Probably every like 20 at bats, something like that, whatever the number is. And then you just randomly, if you just simulated it randomly and, over the course of 600 plate appearances, there would be stretches where he goes 80, 90, 100 without hitting a home run. And then there would be stretches where he has like 10 and 100. And that was just if you randomly distribute them. And so I always struggle with like, yes, they're human beings. They're not like a spreadsheet formula that I Googled one time, but I don't know if there's any there, I guess is like, is he hot? Yeah. I mean, he gets hot. So sure. That's a long way of saying what Scott already said.
All right, so for Miguel Sanó, I will just point out, in the month of August, he also has a 13% walk rate, so that does help mitigate some of the strikeouts if you do play in a points league. If you just want to ride the hot hand, like Carlos Santana has been absolutely awful, and if you play in shallower leagues, I think you could just go with whoever's hot, and right now Miguel Sanó is, and Carlos Santana is not. Let's talk about that fun pitching matchup from Wednesday, and it was Josiah Gray up against Edward Cabrera in his major league debut. Goes 6 1/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. He only had 4 swinging strikes on 78 pitches, and he cruised through 6 innings pitched. I believe he was under 60 pitches through 6, and then he started the 7th inning with a walk, a flyout, homer, homer, and walk, and then he's pulled from the game after that. So, Chris, I will go to you here. This is Edward Cabrera, one of the top pitching prospects in baseball, and on your Miami Marlins. So what did you see from him in this start? He's 32% rostered. Looks like he is projected for 2 starts next week.
Nothing terribly impressive in this start, to be honest. You know, he threw hard and kind of was able to wiggle his way out of trouble for the most part. They probably left him in a little too long, and he gave up, what, 2 home runs in the 7th inning?
Yep, back-to-back.
Yeah. But, like, you know, he averaged 96 miles per hour with the fastball. That's obviously really good. The changeup, supposed to be a pretty strong pitch for him. It was his second most used pitch. He only got 4 swinging strikes on the day on 78 pitches, 3 with the changeup on 31. So all in all, I think a pretty lackluster debut for Edward Cabrera, but it's 1 start. The scouts, you know, there have been scouts since before last season who have been saying he's the Marlins' best pitching prospect, even ahead of Sixto Sanchez. So, you know, there's definitely deserves more of a look than just this one.
Scott, I mentioned 32% rostered. Looks like at home against the Phillies and at the Mets next week. Would that interest you as a 2-star pitcher?
Yeah, some. It could have been worse. I will say I was having some regrets when he made it through 5 innings without issuing a walk, because I thought the walks were going to be what prevented him from being an impact contributor to start out. Now, he ended up with 3 walks in 6 1/3 innings. So, you know, the final stat line ended up being about what we thought it would be, right? It's just he, for 5 innings, he looked like, I don't know, I don't remember exactly how many pitches he had through 5 innings. He ended up with only 78 in 6 1/3. So he was efficient. He was getting a lot of ground balls, which is, you know, that fastball, for as hard as he throws it, it has a lot of sinking action. That makes sense. That's going to be a good thing for him going forward. What really concerns me is that the Nationals lineup, not exactly a juggernaut right now, and they only swung and missed 4 times.
Yeah.
And through those first 5 innings, I think it was only 2 times. And if he's going to have control problems on top of that, I don't know. I don't think I'm ready to start him. I don't think I'm ready to use him in that 2-start week. And I still think it's a possibility he gets sent down after the first of those starts with Trevor Rogers coming back.
Yeah.
Maybe Lizardo gets sent down instead, but
yeah, I think it was Craig Mish say he probably has 3 or 4 starts in the majors is what he'll probably make in addition to this one. So, you know, obviously that wouldn't take him through the end of the season. I don't know whether that's a send him down for a little bit. He hasn't thrown many innings at all this season because he's dealt with a lot of injuries and various injuries. And like there was an infection, I think, or something last season that sidelined him for a long time, or last year, I guess there wasn't a season for him. But yeah, I would guess he's not going to run out the season as a member of the rotation.
Yeah, he had just over 60 innings pitched in the minors this year. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, not really a lot. So, we'll see if he's around for both of those starts next week. But again, that's at home against the Phillies and at the Mets for Edward Cabrera. On the other side, Josiah Gray, 6 innings, 2 runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. He had 18 swinging strikes on 91 pitches. 13 of those came on the curveball. And I thought this was his most encouraging start yet. 50% ground ball rate for Josiah Gray in this start. He only allowed 1 home run, which has been a huge issue for him. And I wrote last week,
the bar is a little low there.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't done much yet, but
no, just with the home runs. I mean, no, he's been very impressive overall. Just the only one home run.
Yeah, because I mean, normally he's giving up like three home runs per start. Yeah. So I think his fly ball rate coming into this start was, you know, somewhere close to like 70%, which is just, it's a ridiculous amount. So I thought this was his best. He's 79% rostered, so maybe in some shallower leagues. And he is also going up against the Phillies and the Mets. I guess the whole National League East just faces each other next week. I don't know. I don't know what's up with those matchups. But if he's lying around somewhere, Scott, I mean, obviously, I think we've been banging the drum for Josiah Gray.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For a long while now, and he keeps backing it up. He keeps doing it. Now, this was against the Marlins, so I will point that out. And like, just looking at his minor league track record, he's always going to be a fly ball pitcher.
Yep.
The hope is that he continues to miss bats at a rate that it won't ruin him. And you know, some guys that we think of as longtime aces,
some of the best pitchers, but Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer are arguably the two best pitchers of the last decade, and they've always given up a ton of fly balls.
Yeah, and so far Josiah Gray has had a swinging strike rate very similar to theirs, so it could end up being not much of an issue at all for him. Obviously, that's counting on a lot of things to go right, and we're only seven appearances into his major league career, but. I would say the good definitely outweighs the bad up to this point.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote about Josiah Gray in the Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter, which if you aren't subscribed to, it is free. CBSSports.com/newsletters. Make sure you sign up for Chris's Fantasy Football Today newsletter as well. But that's exactly what I wrote, is that the path for him is there. It's Max Scherzer. It's Justin Verlander. No one's saying he's going to be that good, but if he gets swinging strikes at this level and he limits the walks, he can still give up home runs and still be really, really good. Again, that is Josiah Gray. Before we hit news and notes, as always, we thank each and every one of you for your 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. If you do leave one, feel free to drop a question in the review and we'll answer it in the future. We actually have two of those questions right now. This one's from nickname Grade the Trade. Tim Anderson, Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher, and Kenley Jansen for Fernando Tatis, Madison Bumgarner, and Josh Rojas. Does not say what the format is.
That's a blockbuster.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
It seems about fair.
I think it's fair.
It's fair. Oh, wait. Ohtani just the pitcher, right?
Yes.
Oh, it's not fair. You're getting Tatis. You're giving up.
Right, but you're getting potentially, Mad Bum, who I don't think has much value at all.
Rojas, I mean, you're getting those two players. Are just throw-ins. I'm thinking of it as Anderson and just the pitching half of Ohtani for Fernando Tatis, the best player in fantasy. I'd do that.
Yeah, but you're also getting a top 12 closer. Ohtani's pitching like a top 30 starting pitcher. It's basically just a depth dump. It's consolidating depth, but
yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be easy to do in a 15 team league, but I'm assuming it's shallower than that because most people play in leagues shallower than that. So
what?
Yeah. I'll give it a B.
All right.
You know, I just wanted to go back to the, you know, Josiah Gray, Justin Verlander comps, because I wanted to be like, and you know, we don't have to comp him to Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. There are other pitchers there aren't that many pitchers who've been successful over the last decade with fly ball rate under or ground ball rate under 40%. It's actually after those two guys, it's probably. And excuse me, this is not a knock on Josiah Gray. Danny Duffy, Robbie Ray, and Mike Minor in terms of the best pitchers within. And that's over the last decade. There have been individual seasons and stretches that have been different. But, you know, you probably want to get him a little more ground ball heavy than he has been.
Definitely. This next APR question is from Crickets. Help! 6x6 head-to-head categories league with innings pitch and OPS. We can keep three players at the end of the year. I am in third place after being in first for most of the season and am trying to decide whether I should hang on to Ronald Acuna and keep him as a first-round pick next year or drop him and keep Walker Buehler as a second-round pick. My other keepers are Ohtani in the 16th and Vlad Jr. in the 5th. Am I crazy for wanting to hold on to Acuna? Trevor Rogers as a last-round keeper is also an option. I'm assuming that this person needs the roster spot that Ronald Acuna is currently taking up, and that's why they're asking if they should drop him.
Well, yeah, because if it's a possibility, the easy answer is just
wait until your keeper deadline and see how Acuña is doing, because if it sounds like he's going to be on track for opening day, then of course you'd keep him with your first round pick. But he does say we can keep three players at the end of the year. I don't know if I'm reading that too precisely, like they have to decide on October 4th or whatever. Which case, I could see erring on the side of caution and taking Bueller with a second pick, because he's probably going to be a first rounder next year.
I think you can look at it. There's another calculation that I think you need to keep in mind, which is if you drop a player, do they go back into the player pool to be kept? Like, does their value reset? If someone picks up Ronald Acuña as a free agent, do they get to keep him as a free agent value? You know, I think that's an important part of it, because if yes, then there's no way you can drop him, even if you're not keeping him. You can't give someone else. And even if they would keep him for his original price, you still run the risk there of, you know, if he is back, like Scott said, in time for opening day, someone else just got the number one overall player or the number two overall player, for free, or, you know, at cost, but you don't get that chance unless you're picking first or second. So I would keep that in mind when you're making that kind of drop decision in a keeper league as well.
Oh, wait a second. This is stupid.
Well, okay.
Never mind.
It's not stupid. So
never mind. I'm sorry. I thought I saw something in the question that made it an easy decision. Never mind. Go ahead.
All right, let's move on to news and notes. Trevor Story left the game with a minor leg injury. The Rockies scored 15 runs in their doubleheader. Trevor Story went 0-for-8. And after that performance, he's still actually having an okay August. 267 batting average, 880 OPS. He's having an okay year. 16 homers, 17 steals, 246 batting average overall. I don't know. I have him in my most important league, and it feels like he's been a lot worse than this. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Trevor Story.
I can't say that like I have a good explanation for it. But if he leaves Coors Field next year, as it seems almost certain, it's going to be hard to know how to value him. I think you're probably looking at him dropping from a first round pick to sixth, seventh round.
I think
is that too much?
I think in Roto, he's probably still going to be at least a third or fourth rounder. That's just like my early takeaway, but just because he's going to steal so many bases, he could steal more bases if he's out of Coors Field, I guess. It depends on the team that he goes to.
Yeah. But
Nolan Arenado left Coors Field. He's still having a very good year. He's just obviously.
Yeah, he's having the year we're afraid he would have, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't become a total scrub, but he's become just kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Just kind of a guy who doesn't hit for much average, hits for pretty good power, and whatever. He'll fill out. He's become like Mike Moustakas when Mike Moustakas was good, which.
That's actually a really good comp.
Yeah.
Because like lowish strikeout rate for a power hitter, but no batting average. Yeah.
And clearly not an early round type hitter. Nolan Arenado is like a mid rounder now in all likelihood.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's Trevor Story was never as good a hitter as Nolan Arenado is the problem. So it's like, how much are you paying for steals?
Yeah, does he become a 240 hitter, 250? I don't know. Maybe the Mets are optimistic that Jacob deGrom will be ready to make his return from the 60-day IL. By the second half of September, after the MRI that he underwent Wednesday revealed nothing concerning, and I saw that he was also playing catch on Wednesday. Should people hold on to Jacob deGrom if that's the only hope, second half of September?
If you plan to be playing still in the second half of September, you should try to hold on to him, because obviously there's the potential he's a big difference maker for you. He's going to have to thread the needle to do it, but you know, kind of impact, you have to wait it out.
I think if you're in a point league, you drop him.
Jack Flaherty.
Yeah. I think in a points league, especially like in a roto league, if he gets back and gives you 2 good weeks, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But
in a points league,
like what if he's not even stretched out?
You want somebody else to have him for those final 2 weeks of September? Like that seems crazy.
You gotta make it to the final 2 weeks of September.
I know, but it's not like you can stick him in an IL spot, stick him in a bench spot.
Maybe you can't.
You can. You always can.
I can't.
Your bench is full of so many IL players that you would have to start Jacob DeGrom. Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, I can. Yeah, I've got Freddie Peralta, Ian Anderson, Trevor Rogers, Aaron Civale, Chris Paddock on one team.
Well, I drop. And this Chris is a roto. Who cares?
Right, I can drop Chris Paddock.
There's somebody else you can drop.
Right, probably. But I'm still going to have to drop someone. And the chances of, you know, Jacob DeGrom making an impact are at this point pretty slim.
Yeah, the chances of winning the league are pretty slim. They're better if you have Jacob DeGrom.
You don't know anything about my team, but you're right.
I will agree with both of you and say if you can afford to hold on to him, that you should. But I can see, yeah, I mean, you need to get there. You need to perform in your head-to-head playoffs. If Jacob DeGrom's not there for that, then he's obviously not helping you. Jack Flaherty was placed on the IL with a right shoulder strain. Mike Schilt said Kwanghyun Kim is a candidate to start on Sunday. Mookie Betts will be activated on Thursday against the Padres. On the other side of that game, Yu Darvish will make his return. Tristan McKenzie was placed on the IL with right shoulder fatigue, retroactive to August 22nd, which sucks because McKenzie was pitching so well and we've been hyping him up for so long.
It was just so 2021 that that news coming down right then.
Oh man, his velocity's been holding steady deep into the season. What a grand. Yeah.
Right. Carlos Rodon will return Thursday and start against the Blue Jays. Would you guys put him back in your lineup? Say if you play in a daily league, his first game back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays are scuffling offensively too, so I don't see any problems with that. Alex Bregman made his long-awaited return on Wednesday. He hit sixth in the lineup and went 2-for-5 with a double and an RBI. Jesse Winker has yet to resume baseball activities and remains a couple of weeks away from returning from the IL. George Springer will be reevaluated after running the bases again Thursday and could be activated as soon as Friday. Kevin Biggio has a grade 1 UCL sprain in his left elbow and is considered week to week. Matthew Boyd is penciled in to start Sunday against the Blue Jays. Now, I just talked down the Blue Jays. I don't know if I want to use Matthew Boyd against the Blue Jays. He is 39% rostered.
Why would you want to use Matthew Boyd anyway?
I mean, I don't know. We're desperate for pitching out here, Scott. I don't know. He's 39% rostered. I guess neither of you want him, right?
I mean, look, there's not a lot of great options out there right now. Like, I'm currently looking for some pitchers to add, and like,
oh gosh,
I'm gonna add Kyle Freeland.
I'll go with Freeland over Boyd. Boyd is Josiah Gray without the elite whiff rate. So he's, you know, everything we worry about with Josiah Gray without anything to counteract it.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. TJ Anson was placed back on the IL with a forearm strain. Brandon Belt will likely go on the bereavement list on Friday. The Angels placed Reed Detmers on the IL without an injury designation, which means it's likely COVID-related. Noah Syndergaard will begin a rehab assignment at High A Brooklyn on Thursday. And the plan is for him to come back as a relief pitcher, so not really much value there for fantasy. After signing a one-year contract extension, Yadier Molina confirmed that 2022 will be his final season. Chris, is Yadier Molina a Hall of Famer? And you're frozen. And he's gone.
But
you're frozen, Chris. You might want to back out.
Start over.
Am I back?
Yeah, back out. Come back in. I'm sorry. You're not going to get to answer your question about Yadier Molina. Chris Archer will start Sunday against the Orioles. He is 20% rostered, but I assume he's in a similar boat as Matthew Boyd right now. So let's see where that goes. Dylan Bundy was placed on the IL with a right shoulder strain. And some quick prospect updates. Cardinals top prospect Nolan Gorman is on fire at AAA. Over his last 18 games, he's batting .358. 427, 612 with 4 homers and 13 RBI. The Rangers are leaning towards promoting Glenn Otto from AAA to start Friday's game against the Houston Astros. And between AA and AAA this season, 3.20 ERA, 134 strikeouts, over 95 and 2/3 innings pitched for Glenn Otto. Scott, should he be on our radar in any standard mixed leagues?
Yeah, I would keep an eye on him. He's not a particularly highly regarded prospect. He's kind of a late bloomer here at 25. The secondary arsenals made big strides this year. They kind of thought he was going to have to be a reliever because because he hadn't developed enough of an arsenal. But then he, you know, between two organizations and two levels this year, he has 12.6 K per nine. Now, I will point out his numbers have gotten worse since moving up to AAA, the strikeout rate specifically. So, you know, I think there's still a lot of reason to be skeptical of Glenn Otto, but you can understand, just given his history with the injuries and the weird development path, why he hasn't been able to gain much traction with the prospect towns. And I would be interested in seeing how he performs in the majors. By the way, I want to mention for Nolan Gorman, his strikeout rate since he got hot at AAA, way, way down. I don't have the exact number, but I think it's below 20% since he took off at AAA. And something I've noticed with Gorman throughout his climb up the ladder is every time he gets to the new levels, he looks awful for a stretch. He looks awful, looks like he can't do anything right anymore, and then suddenly he figures it out. I remember Ronald Acuna took a similar path, and obviously that turned out okay. But if Gorman is not going to be a guy who strikes out 25-30% of the time with his power potential, and probably as a second baseman, I mean, he might be a star, Nolan Gorman.
Nice. Yeah.
For the Cardinals.
And the Cardinals could definitely use it too, because, I mean, their lineup has been okay. Paul Goldschmidt double dong on Wednesday. We'll talk about him a little bit later on. But, I mean, for the most part, their lineup has been subpar. So, I mean, they can use a spark. Probably not going to happen this year, but maybe early on next season, Nolan Gorman. Yeah, I could see that happening. Let's take a quick break. When we return, we have our first pitcher to 200 strikeouts. We'll talk about it next here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And that pitcher is Zach Wheeler. Becomes the first pitcher to 200 strikeouts up against the Tampa Bay Rays. He goes 8+. 10 hits, 7 runs, 5 of those earned, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts. I mean, this start was just all over the place. He did have 18 swinging strikes, and I watched a lot of it. 2 unearned runs, Andrew McCutchen lost the ball in the lights in the 4th inning, which kind of opened the floodgates for Zach Wheeler. And then Wheeler got through 8 innings with 93 pitches, and Joe Girardi runs him out there for the 9th, which, I guess if he's at 93 pitches, okay, you want to save your bullpen, it could make some sense. But this is now 2 starts in a row where Girardi has left Wheeler in maybe a little bit too long, and Wheeler has fallen apart in that final inning where, you know, in the
9th, wheels came off.
The wheels came off. You are correct. He gave up a 3-run homer without recording an out in that 9th inning, which really kind of just skewed the line here. The last 9 starts for Zach Wheeler, we're now up to a 4.49 ERA. But, I mean, we're starting him next week. He's at the Nationals and he's at the Marlins.
Of course we are, yeah. And it's just unfortunate Joe Girardi let him come out for that 9th inning, because by that point he had given up just 3 runs. I don't know how many of them were. Was it just one of them that was earned? One of the 3 heading into the 9th inning? He ended up giving up 7 runs, 5 earned. I think I have that right, don't I?
He gave up seven runs, 5 earned, and that was 4 and 2. So 4 runs, 2 earned going into the 9th.
Okay.
And then he gave up that 3-run homer.
We would have thought of it as this awesome start for Zach Wheeler if he'd just come out after 8.
Yeah.
And so it really changes. You got to think of the context, and you got to, yeah, I mean, obviously the numbers don't look good during this 9 start stretch, but there are a lot of good numbers within the numbers. including the first eight innings of this start. So I wouldn't lose heart if you have Wheeler in fantasy. I wouldn't consider sitting him or anything like that. He was bound to have some regression. He had a 2.05 ERA before this stretch began. Even now, his ERA is less than 3. So, you know, stick with him. Stick with him. He's still a good pitcher going through a rough stretch. But there's a good chance he has a strong September and wins you your league still.
It looks like Chris is probably going to bow out here. He's having internet issues, but I did ask him on the side if Yadier Molina is a Hall of Famer. And he said, quote, "I used to be pretty anti-Yadi for the Hall of Fame, and I definitely don't think he's a first ballot guy. Posey and Maurer were both better at their peaks, for instance, but he's been good to very good for a long time and should get in." So,
yeah, I think he's going to get in.
Yeah, he will.
You know what? What gets lost a lot of times, particularly among fantasy baseball analysts, because they're all about numbers, right? Is, you know, it is Hall of Fame. It's not Hall of War. It's not even Hall of Greatness. It's Hall of Fame. And you just look at the hardware Yadier Molina's collected over his career.
It's a good
10
point.
Gold gloves, 2 World Series championships, 9 gold gloves, 10 All-Star games, 2 World Series championships, 4 platinum gloves. You know, and then the stats are at least right there. So, you know, in my opinion, Joe Maurer and Buster Posey are Hall of Famers too. So it's not even really an issue, but I think for sure Yadier Molina is going to be.
I have 2 Rockies and 2 Cubs that I think you might want to add. One of them was Brendan Rodgers, and let's talk about his teammate, Connor Joe, who went 2-for-4 with his 8th home run, 4 RBI in that same game as Brendan Rodgers. It was game 2 of their doubleheader. He is 20% rostered, and the Rockies play 7 games next week. 4 of them are at home. So I am pretty interested in both Rodgers and Connor Joe for next week. Scott, Connor Joe has first and outfield eligibility at only 20% rostered.
Yeah, I really like him. I'm curious to see what's going to happen to him when Raimel Tapia comes back, because it doesn't seem like they might be able to play Joe, but they would have to play a not so great center fielder, and that's tough to do when your outfield's as big as the one in Coors Field is. So it'll be interesting to see if they decide to do that. Because Joe, you know, specifically having the advantages of Coors Field with his ability to get on base, I mean, he looks like he could be a real standout. And in that specific environment with everyday at-bats, I feel pretty confident saying that. I mean, he was an on-base freak in the minors too. And I'll also mention that the Rockies, the last 2 weeks of the season, have especially good matchups. All but one of those last 4 series are at home, and the one that isn't at home is against the Diamondbacks. So they line up well for your end of season considerations. You know, presuming Joe's around there, but I'm thinking like CJ Cron. I'm thinking Brendan Rodgers, of course. It was fun to see the Rockies lineup do some things on the road today. Joe, Rodgers. Even Cron hit a home run, and his away splits are pretty awful.
Yeah, that actually took me back a little bit. I was like, wait, what? CJ Cron could hit home runs on the road? Who would have thunk it? 2 Cubs hitters, potentially, to add. Ian Happ, another guy, runs hot and cold. He strikes out quite a bit. He had a sock and a shoe on Wednesday. That's a home run and a steal. Over his last 8 games, he has 11 hits, including 3 homers. He's 30% rostered. And then Frank Schwindel, Frankie 2 hits. I don't know what else we have to say about the guy. I mean, he's only 27% rostered. He had 3 more hits across the doubleheader. He's now batting .323 with a .960 OPS. I know he's not going to keep that up, but he's been really good for the Cubs, Scott. So your interest level, where should you add either of these guys? Ian Happ, Frank Schwindel.
I'm not that interested in adding Happ, to be honest. I know his August, the numbers are looking decent, but he's just been, they don't look good enough to erase all the suffering he's caused this season to those who've invested in him, in my mind. Schwindel's a little more interesting. Right, it's right to be skeptical of a 29-year-old, I think he is, who hasn't gotten a chance in the majors before, but I always found him interesting for somebody who doesn't get that chance. And since returning to the majors, you mentioned his season numbers, Frank, but since returning to the majors on July 30th, Schwindel's batting .367 with four home runs. So he's keeping it going. The longer he keeps it going, the more interesting he becomes. I think in all roto leagues, somebody out there should probably be rostering Schwindel at this point.
Yep. If you have a corner infielder, a utility bat in those deeper formats, he is crushing lefties. He's got an OPS approaching 1,200 against lefties, an OPS just over 800 against righties. So, I mean, it's a stark difference, but he's holding his own against right-handed pitching, so it's not really that terrible for Frank Schwindel. Scott, I'm going to have you rank a few outfielders here. And Jake Meyers, who we've talked about quite a bit recently, he went 2-for-5 with a run and RBI on Wednesday. He's now batting .316 with an .871 OPS. He's 17% rostered. And then Brandon Marsh, who we've also talked about quite a bit, 3-for-5, hit his first home run of the season. It helps that he's facing the Orioles and their pitching is bad and it's a good environment in Camden Yards. But he's batting .400 over his last 15 games, 22% rostered. Rank this group: Connor Joe, Ian Happ, Jake Meyers, Brandon Marsh.
I'll go Jake Meyers first. I think his best case scenario is probably the best of all of them. And other than a strikeout rate, he's looked really good so far. I'll go Connor Joe second for the reasons I mentioned earlier. Obviously, taking a big chance on him retaining the playing time. But if he does, I think he'll have been worth the investment. Brandon Marsh, of course, is the highest profile of this group, but the strikeout rate has been awful.
Yeah.
And most of his productions come just in the last 2 days, a combined 7 hits between them, including his one and only home run since being called up. So I still need to see a lot more from him, I feel like. So, but he'd be third, and Ian Happ fourth.
All right, Scott. I have random trivia. Are you ready?
Oh, yes.
And it's baseball trivia, so it's not really random. It's not like...
Oh, not that random.
I couldn't even think of like a random fun fact or anything. Anyway, Whit Merrifield hit a grand slam on Wednesday. Guess when the last time he hit a home run before this game was? Just give me a date.
I think probably it was in June. I'm going to say June 11th.
June 29th. It's been almost 2 months since Whit Merrifield has hit a home run. When I was scrolling through the game log, I just kept scrolling and scrolling. I'm like, how long ago was it that he hit a home run? But he's running
a lot. Don't you hate when like you're trying to impress somebody with a stat and they have you guess it and they overshoot the stat I just did?
Yep, I sure do. I sure do, Scott. And hopefully you don't do that for all these other ones, but let's find out. Zach Plesac, I mentioned that I was holding on to him this week because he's facing the Texas Rangers. What did he do? 5 2/3, 8 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. He stinks. I watched a lot of this start. He has nothing. He has nothing. The fastball velocity was down almost 2 miles per hour. Both the slider and curve were down almost 3 miles per hour in this start. He cannot command his secondary pitches. Fastball is very hittable. Middle. He's bad. Zach Plesac is bad. But, Scott, the trivia for you is guess how many hard hit balls he allowed against the Texas Rangers in this start.
Okay, so we gave up 8 hits. One was a home run. Hard hit balls, 95 plus miles per hour, right?
Correct.
9.
14.
I went kind of low there on purpose.
Oh my. 14 hard hit balls. Man, he is still 88% rostered on CBS. And he's got 2 starts next week at the Royals, at the Red Sox. I can't do it. I can't do it anywhere. I can't even do it in a points league, Scott. I can't.
No. You shut it. I was not with you in holding out for the Rangers even. And you'll remember I was the high guy on Plesac coming in. Really, I think my worst 3 calls this year are Dylan Bundy, Kenta Maeda, and Zach Plesac. 3 pitchers who put up career numbers in a 2-month season.
Yep.
And my bad call was to buy into it. So who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
Who would have known?
That was part of the trickery of this season, right? Uh-huh. Was, you know, how much weight do we put on stats from last year? And, you know, some people lean into it a little bit more, i.e. yourself. And you know, I definitely did for some players as well, but yeah, it was definitely tough.
Well, Maeda is the one that bothers me the most because he was no kind of discount at all. You could argue Plesak and Bundy, if they were legit, were a discount, but yeah. Maeda, yeah, that's the one that upsets me the most, actually.
All right, the last two that I have here, Jared Walsh hit his 23rd home run. Guess the last time he hit a homer, Scott.
He's been hurt for a while. I will say July 17th.
Ooh, I thought you had it. July 7th was the last time Jared Walsh hit a home run. He's really, really slowed down. Do you need to drop Jared Walsh anywhere?
I know his point per game average is pretty fringy and probably in a points league. You could afford to drop him. Probably in any kind of head-to-head league with the smaller lineups, you can drop him. Yeah. Categories or roto league specifically with the bigger lineups, not so much.
All right, last one here. Luis Castillo was at the Brewers on Wednesday. 6 1/3, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts. He had 18 swinging strikes on 101 pitches. He has a quality start in 7 of his last 8. On May 29th, his ERA was 7.22. What is his ERA today, Scott? August 26th.
4.22.
Oh, you know it. You knew it already?
No, I didn't.
It's 4.29. I thought you actually had it right. I was like, you saw it already. But yeah, so he's at 4.29. Do you think he can get it below 4 by the end of the season?
Did he at one point? Because he had that horrible start a few turns ago.
I don't think he ever got below 4. I think it was approaching that. It was in the low 4s, but he didn't get it below 4. And for someone to have a 7.22 ERA on May 29th, if that pitcher can get below 4 by the end of the season, that is, specifically a starting pitcher, that is a really strong feat.
Its low point was 4.09 this year. I'm going to say he will not.
I agree with you.
I think it will be lower than the 4.29 it is now.
Yeah, I think I moved him inside my top 13 or top 12 starting pitchers. He's right around there, and he deserves to be. Since the start of June, he's looked a lot like Luis Castillo. I do want to just quickly hit some of these early starters sit for next week. Tarek Skubal, 5 innings, 2 runs, 10 strikeouts on Wednesday. He is up against the Oakland A's next week. Would you feel comfortable starting Tarek Skubal there?
I'd rather not. This was kind of... I know the previous couple starts were good, but not with a lot of strikeouts or whiffs. So that was kind of an outlier as far as that goes. And the Cardinals matchup was a favorable one. I think against Oakland, I'd try to avoid Skubal.
Austin Gomber now has a 7.40 ERA in 5 August starts, but he is at Texas next week.
Oh, man.
Would you start him?
I mean, he was at the Cubs this week. That's a Triple-A lineup right now.
Exactly.
Now, the walks had returned the previous two outings. That wasn't the problem in this one against the Cubs. He just got hit hard.
Yep.
So I don't know. He's looking. He doesn't look right. He doesn't look right. And I think I probably wouldn't start him at Texas. And that's one of those where I feel like maybe I'm not being rational. Maybe I'm just kind of knee jerk. He's been hurting me lately. I'm going to bench him. But nonetheless, that's my feeling.
Look, if you can't start him at Texas, then you could probably drop Austin Gomber for one of the most added starting pitchers, Daniel Lynch, Nestor Cortez. Would you make that swap?
Cortez, yeah, I think I would. This late in this, now if this was happening in June, I'd say stick it out longer with Gomber. He's had a good year. Probably just a rough patch, but this late in the season, it might be difficult for him to regain my trust.
Taiwan Walker turned in a quality start. I know he's been pretty meh recently, but looks like he's in line for 2 starts next week against the Marlins and Nationals. Will you be okay starting Taiwan Walker there?
For the 2 starts, yeah, I guess I'd have to consider him a sleeper, but probably just for points leagues. I still don't feel good about him overall. His XFIP, I think this is the first time I've cited XFIP this episode, is 451.
That's not great. not great for Taiwan Walker. Last one here. Herman Marquez has a 6.05 ERA over his last 7 starts. 2 starts next week. 1 at home against the Braves in Coors Field, and then 1 at the Texas Rangers.
Points league only start.
Points league only for Germán Márquez. There was some deeper league players. The only one I really want to ask you about is Bryce Wilson. He went 5 shutout against the Diamondbacks with 7 strikeouts, 3.60 ERA, and 4 starts with the Pirates. He's 5% rostered, and it looks like he's at the White Sox and at the Cubs next week. Deeper leagues only, but Bryce Wilson's been, he's been kind of good with the Pirates.
Yeah, I got a ton of whiffs in this start.
Yeah.
Ton of swinging strikes. I've noticed the Pirates have kind of let him go 4-pitch arsenal when he was pretty much a 2-pitch guy with the Braves. So, I'm not ready to pick him up, but good minor league track record. They may unlock something. The Pirates may unlock something for Bryce Wilson.
Gosh, I forgot. I actually wanted to do Bailey Ober as my oh my goodness gracious player, and now we're an hour in and we haven't talked about Bailey Ober. But I'll quickly mention him. He went 5 shutout against the Red Sox with 7 strikeouts, and his slider velocity remained up about 3.5 miles per hour. Something he talked about his last start where he's consciously doing that. It's like a tighter spin. It's more of like a cutter now than a slider. But Bailey Ober's been pretty good since being recalled, and 14% rostered at the Tigers, at the Rays next week. I'm kind of interested in Bailey Ober. What do you think?
It would have to be a really deep league for me. It's a high fly ball guy, low swinging strike, great guy.
Okay.
There may be something there, but I'm not ready to cast, to throw myself behind that. I do want to mention, since you have him here in the notes, and I know we're running out of time, but Yadiel Hernandez, outfielder for the Nationals, old guy, already in his 30s, but a rookie, spent a lot of time in Cuba, and is taking over in the outfield following following some of the trades they made, and he looks like he could be of some use, and even in some shallower leagues, he makes a lot of contact, hits a lot of line drives, a good profile for batting average with enough power to make it hold up. It feels a lot like Alex Verdugo to me, the profile, from basically a no name who's only rostered in 8% of leagues. So Yadiel Hernandez.
Yep,
is the name.
He's batting .302 with an .836 OPS. I'm actually starting him in a 15-team Roto League, 5 outfielders. I was starting him and Josh Bell, and they went back-to-back, so that was pretty fun to see. The call to the pen, some bullpen updates for the Cardinals. Alex Reyes gave up a run in the 9th. He took his 3rd blown save. He's got an ERA of 6 in August. Hold on, but bit of a rough stretch here. For the Royals, Scott Barlow entered in the 8th with runners on 1st and 2nd. He gave up a hit and took his 6th blown save. For the Cubs, they have 4 saves since trading away Craig Kimbrel. They have all been by different relievers. This time, it was Adam Morgan. So, closer by committee on one of the worst teams in baseball. No thanks. For Tampa Bay, Colin McHugh was used in the 8th inning. He gave up a solo home run, which tied the game, came back out for the 9th once they took the lead, and he winds up with the win. For the Giants, Jake McGee got his 29th save. The Nationals, Kyle Finnegan gave up a walk-off RBI single in the 10th. The Rockies, man, Daniel Bard is just, he's in a free fall right now. In for the save, he gave up a 3-run homer in Wrigley, wasn't even in Coors Field. It was his 8th blown save. The ERA is up to 5.19. The next man up, I believe, is Carlos Estevez, who consistently pitches in the 8th. I just don't think he's very good either, Scott. So, do you think we see a change for the Rockies?
I mean, they rode out Barr during a very rough stretch, I believe, in May.
Sure
where
did.
It seemed like they had to make a change, and they didn't. So I don't know that they care enough to make a change, to be honest.
that's definitely fair. For the Diamondbacks, Tyler Clippard got his 5th save. He's only 19% rostered, so the Diamondbacks are not going to win a lot of games, but Clippard is unquestionably their closer. So if you play in a categories league, he's one to look at. The Twins, Alex Colome, entered with a 2-run lead, quickly gave up a 2-run homer to Kyle Schwarber. And then on the other side, Hansel Robles, we said, all right, maybe watch him, see what happens, because who's his name? Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes has been struggling recently. Hansel Robles then gave up 5 runs in extra innings, so he's not very good. To stream or not to stream for Thursday, Brad Keller at the Mariners, Eliezer Hernandez versus the Nationals, Patrick Corbin at the Marlins, Miles Michaelis at the Pirates, Brett Anderson versus the Reds, and John Gant at the Red Sox.
I mentioned yesterday I like Brad Keller. I like Eliezer Hernandez.
Miles Michaelis at Pittsburgh and Patrick Corbin at Miami aren't bad either, but they're a little too risky for me.
For Friday, Chris Bubich at the Mariners, Jake Odorizzi at the Rangers, Jay Happ at the Pirates, Michael Wacha at the Orioles, Rich Hill versus the Nationals, Paolo Espino at the Mets.
I don't really want to do any of these. If you're forcing me to pick two, I will go Wacha at the Orioles and Bubich at Seattle.
I was thinking Odorizzi and Jay Happ, so that tells you where we're at. I mean, none of these pitchers are great, but yeah. there's some okay matchups. You know what's hilarious? On the rundown, I have Team Name Thursday here. Well, I'll read your team names. I wrote in parentheses, get here by 55 minutes, no later. Good job, Frank. From Justin, I apologize if I ruin your name here, Tortorese on Twitter. My daughter wants to submit Mookie Monster for Team Name Tuesday.
Not bad.
Not bad. And then it turns out Justin also emailed in a much longer one. This is more like, I don't know, a paragraph, a poem. I don't. It's from something. It's kind of long. I'm sorry, Frank, if you don't get it. Scott and Chris will. All right, so there's a lot of pressure on you right now. Cassandra, she's a fox. In Thai France, she would be called La Arenado, and she would be hunted with only her Bobby Witt to protect her. She's a Babe Ruth. She's a Roto Babe Ruth. In Latin, she would be called Babia Machado. If she were a ball player, she would be Babraham Toro. If she lived in the Cretaceous, she'd be a Babasaurus Rex Brothers. Schwindel. Do you have any idea what this is? Because I have no idea.
By the Schwindel exclamation mark at the end, I suspect it's a reference to Wayne's World.
Schwing.
Yeah.
Is that
that would... was something Wayne and Garth would say in unison.
I'm
talking about a babe.
I know Wayne's World. I know what it is. I haven't seen the movies.
it's not that great, but it's
surprise.
It had a moment. It had a moment.
I mean, they're cult classics, right? So I guess I should watch them at some point. From Colin, No Adamus Guay.
Okay.
This is supposed to be No Mamas Guay, which
Chris would have gotten it.
Yeah, I think Chris would have gotten it. And a bonus. She sells sea shake by the seashore.
Yeah.
From Vinny, the Wong Minter.
Like the long winter.
Long winter, yeah. All arise for the judge.
Oh, okay.
The Wong and the winding Rodan. It's pretty good.
Okay, sure.
Adolis like to see it. Am I reading that correctly? Adolis like to see it? I don't get it. Called up from Class A ball. It's a good one.
Yeah.
And then Framber Waves of Grain.
We haven't heard that one before. That's pretty good.
Pretty good. From Jason, Dear Apollo, Starbuck, and Boomer.
I don't know.
I think it's, I looked it up earlier. I think it's like Battlestar Galactica or something. Team Name Tuesday, Admiral Willie Adamus.
Okay.
It's probably also related to Battlestar Galactica. Two more here from Patrick, Sosa Distance.
Like go the distance?
No, I interpreted it as social distance. Social distance.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Sammy Sosa. Okay. Last one from Terry. A ring of Rosarena pocket full of posy. That's a mouthful.
That works with two. No, I think it works.
That's very good.
Works with two names, yeah.
All right, let's wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.